and welcome to the Rancor's Brothel, issue number 49. I am your co-host, Matt.
And I am your co-host, Cody.
And with us today is my new best friend, Cody Schroeder.
Hey, this is Cody.
There you go.
We're all doing jazz hands right now. You can't see it, but it's awesome.
I want to tell a little story about how I met Cody. Because he's actually...
Schroeder.
Cody Schroeder is Cody Grady's friend. I'm on a medical leave from work right now, and I work for a small company, so we don't have short-term disability insurance. I put up a GoFundMe site. It looks like I'll be missing one paycheck in this period of time it's going to take me to get back up to stuff and be able to return to the job that I love. And Cody, like, donated to it and was just like, yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Following Network shows. I listen to you on Mad Chat and Rancor's Brothel. And I was like, fucking A, dude. So I was just so, like, I don't know. I was tickled by it. So thank you.
No problem.
Me and Chad last night were here out.
Yeah, I'm a nobody, and now I'm a somebody.
He's not my.
You know, I'm a contender.
Say that's the thing. So I introduced Schroeder to the show, and I was like, "Hey, you should check this out." And like,
I became a whore of the show.
I was like 3 days later, he's like, "Did you know in episode 24, Matt said this?" I was like, "No, because of the backlog. Because I'm a terrible host.
I've never watched any shows before I actually became the host or just the show."
That's pretty true. Pretty accurate.
Yeah, when Dustin was leaving, I was like, okay, I need somebody nerdy and somebody that I won't make fun of as much and drive crazy so that they move to Albuquerque, New Mexico. Okay, Cody.
Hey, Dustin.
Yeah. Hey, Dustin. Hey, buddy. How you doing?
You probably noticed here on the Rancor's Brothel page that we haven't been doing S.H.I.E.L.D. last week or this week, and we haven't done Battlestar Brothel for the last two episodes of Battlestar Galactica because my computer is busted. So we're actually recording over at Cody's house today. And sorry about that. So they might be sporadic for a little while to get my shit fixed. But thank you for listening. We appreciate you. Hopefully you went and checked out Bovine. You can find that at www.followthe.tv/bovine. It's our first comic book. We're working on a couple more now here at Follow Networks, but that's our first published thing. You can get a PDF for just $2, or if you want to get a print copy, it costs you $5, and you also get a PDF as well, because print copies are pre-order. We haven't printed them yet, so we need to get those orders in there so we can send it off to the print shop. Get on it.
Yeah.
What? So guys, Geek Movie of the Week. I rented something last night. If you recall, I've been... I've been reading the Before Watchmen series.
Right.
As I can get them from the library. And so I just kind of had the hankering to watch the movie again. I don't own that one for some fucked reason. So I hit the Family Video and got it. And what the fuck is funny about Family Video?
I just love the fact that you were next to probably one of like two operating Family Videos.
And
in
you know
the city.
What's fucked up? Like, you know, they always have the sign of like, no, we're still hiring management. Like, no, you're not. You're not hiring for management, you liars. So, yeah. I fucking love that feeling. But, so I ran Watchmen to watch it last night. Like, I fucking forgot. My wife's in love with Patrick Wilson. I forgot he was Night Owl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just completely spaced it. Like, oh, wow. And then you see his dick, too. So I'm, like, watching the movie at 1 in the morning. I'm texting Natalie, like, I just saw Patrick Wilson's penis.
Take that.
To her. So she's probably watching it right now while I'm over here.
Okay.
Flick.
Somebody was going to go there.
I assume that you actually read Watch as well.
Yes.
I was just making sure that there was the known difference between the film and the graphic novel.
I mean, I've read graphic novels, whereas I've seen probably half a dozen times.
Well, see, so I guess it would be a good place to start. How do you guys feel that movie pairs the graphic novel? Because personally, I think that they're relatively comparable, given storylines.
Or even comparable, I'd say.
Comparable, comparable?
You fucking asshole.
But I think that's one of the reasons why actually it didn't do as well at the box office, because they do try and stay so close to storylines. I think it's always hard to translate comic books.
It is. And, you know, Alan Moore like got so pissed off at The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and V for Vendetta, and he didn't even watch The Watchmen, which is fucking hilarious, because for as far as his materials go, this is probably the best screen adaptation
that
he could hope for.
I mean, really, what kind of changes were made besides, you know,
the big monster.
Besides that, is there really anything that stands out?
I mean, like, Ozymandias' history, like, they imply in the movie that he got rich from making figures of himself.
No, not because he's a fucking genius.
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know.
But it's interesting, just to throw in that little tidbit of history, you know how I love legal battles in comic book history. Because the cool thing about The Watchmen, well, not cool for Alan Moore, because as I've talked about on the show before, Alan Moore loves litigation when it comes to the big two. What's interesting is that, so these are, the original characters are Charleston characters, so like the 50s and 60s comics that Alan Moore grew up with. So Ozymandias is supposed to be Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, I think, from Charleston. And so they all have basically...
And like Rorschach is the Question.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, for mainstream.
But so he wanted to rewrite those original characters, screw around with, you know, kind of like we see Mark Waid, Kingdom Come, you know, with actual DC characters.
Well, you know, you bring up Kingdom Come. You know, there's a scene in Kingdom Come where Rorschach and the Question are at a bar together?
Really?
Yeah, in that bar where when Superman like first comes back. And they're like, you know, youngins, fucking get in line or get the fuck out, you know? In that bar, there is a scene where it's like, it's the Phantom Stranger with the Question and Rorschach are sitting at a table together having a
beer. That's, yeah. That's all. No, but so...
And you know what? Actually, Leonard Nimoy is in it.
That's fantastic. I don't have that trade. I've read it before. I get that trade.
I've read that trade so much. I like pages coming out of it. I fucking ruined it so much.
So good.
But he all the cum stains too.
Starbucks. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
It's rough.
So he, I mean, he originally licensed these to DC under the thought that, okay, once it goes out of print, and this is the way the legalese was in the contract. Once it goes out of print, it all the characters revert back to Alan Moore. Well, so what DC's been doing is just every couple of years reprinting new Watchmen. And so they've held the rights to the characters probably a good 25 to 30 years they should have, which is why
Spider-Man and Sony.
Yeah, it's true. Know? It's just off the fuck all the time. The creative genius. But anyway.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why Alan Moore didn't go to law school, okay? It's because he liked eugenics.
It's true.
Maybe he wanted to be a good litigator. He should have been so creative.
But overall, I think it's a solid, really good. That intro scene is fantastic.
The intro is the death of the comedian.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I mean the whole almost music video montage you see them is just very cool.
Oh yeah. The times they are rich.
That's what it is. Yes, yeah, it is.
Especially after having read the Minutemen section before Watchmen, which I know that like that's not fucking Alan Moore's canon, so don't get on me about that fucking. But I mean it's just. I don't know, interesting. It's compelling. It's fun to read.
So, like I said, I read Median and Rorschach. They were both really, really close to what you imagine the Alan Moore's ideas for character to be. I think Brian Azzarello did. I know he did the Rorschach. I don't remember the comedian. It's good. It's dark. It's gritty. It's pretty good.
Son of a whore, man. You give your mom a dollar, she'll suck my dick.
Fucking dirty mouth kids in this, huh? Apparently. Jesus.
Not Jinx.
Yeah. Shit.
Okay, just making sure the mic. I'm gonna leave that in. Fuck it.
Whatever.
What have you been reading?
Okay.
I want to start with the guest.
All right.
Cody Schroeder. Or Coder, if you will.
Coder.
T-Nook.
T-Nook. I'm not actually a big comic book.
Brothel
over.
It's not a horrible thing because it's something I've always wanted to get into, but something I've never really, I guess, turned the page on.
Get it?
Man. And I guess today will be my baptism comic.
Your indoctrination.
Yeah, right?
He's starting you out with fucking Hellblazer?
With Hellblazer and Lock and Key.
Okay.
just like, don't step him up. Just straight on, ram it in there and just let it go.
Man, maybe I would have maybe given him like a good movie, like comic adaptation or like the Game of Thrones books are really nice.
I've already read all of this. I've read it long. I mean the comic adaptation. Oh.
Get you used to the format and throw you right into fucking John Constantine.
I guess the only comics I've ever read were like the first two issues of Walking Dead. They're the only things I've ever read.
Well, I loaned you Saga. You read Saga.
No, I guess I did read Saga. Saga was good.
Speaking of Walking Dead, do you still have my copies?
I do.
Have you read them?
No, I haven't read them. I'm an awful person. Jurassic Park's still sitting over there. I gotta get to those too.
Fuck, we're doing those in the instant film review right now. We're doing the Jurassic Park movies, and I'm like, here we go. Like, Cody's got my copy. I didn't watch it.
I'm terrible. I'm a bad host.
Keep going, Coder.
But yeah, so I'm starting out with those. I'm super excited. I've always wanted to get into comics, and something that I've just never really gotten into. And, it's something I'm super excited about. And hooray for Shane dying in the first Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like, spoilers.
Spoilers, by the way. Yeah, sorry. But
spoilers is kind of fucking 10 years old now.
Yeah, yeah, right. But it's just something that I enjoy a little bit and I've always wanted to get into and never have. So here we go. It's a new adventure.
Oh, very good, man. Remember when, like, I was in a comic book kibbles when I was a child, but, like, something happened to me. I had a roommate in college that really liked comics. Shout out John. Who doesn't list? Who's one of these? He got into him and he gave me that copy of Kingdom Come that I was talking about. Mm. The Binding and a page of Wonder Woman and Power Girl.
Yes, yes. Those stuck together.
Yes. Bitch. But he kind of got me going on it again. And you know, since then, now I'm fucking hooked. Now it's like a fucking hat. I'd probably be better.
It'd be cheaper, I imagine. You know,
probably.
Which he doesn't. NSA.
Yeah,
no, you're listening.
No.
Yeah. Nope.
Drug free.
Easy, Langley. You calm.
Besides the amount of sleep disorders I have, imagine how fucked up I'd be if I smoked.
To be honest, you'd probably be better off.
I mean, the ones that I told you guys about, like the apnea and the sleepwalking, I also have sexsomnia.
Yeah, we've heard of it.
You've heard of this? Okay.
Well, I mean, I've listened to the show.
Okay, so you're aware.
I saw that on the Facebook. So I was like, whoa.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Surprise.
She loves that.
I bet she does.
Sleep sex. Cody. Mm. Cody Grady.
Yes, sir.
Crody.
Yep.
Grody.
Yeah. It doesn't really go well together.
No, it doesn't. No, yeah.
Not at all. Hmm. Not in any.
What have you been reading, friend?
All right. So I have it, as we learned from the last show, I like to pile my comics up that I've been reading. So I've got like 30 comics here. So we didn't do a show last for Zombie Jesus. So I wanted to see what your face was when I said that. So
Is that because of what I put on Facebook?
No, I didn't see that.
My mom got so pissed at me because I was like, hey, celebrate Easter by reading our new Easter comic, Bovine. And I was like, well, I mean, it does have something rising from the dead, so it's kind of like Easter. My mom got so fucking pissed about that. And I was like, you didn't even buy the comic, Mom. Shush.
She didn't give us our new byline of that show where we talk about shit.
Yeah. Hey, I did listen to one of your shows. Which one? The one where you were talking about shit? Which one is that, Mom?
So, I've got 2 weeks worth of comics that I kind of want to touch on. And since you guys are all sitting here, this is kind of neat. I'll actually pull them out and hand them out. Anyone wants to look at them. So, Mark Waid, who's we're talking about Kingdom Come, Mark Waid is fantastic. Met the guy. He's really, really cool. He's been writing Incredible Hulk, and they recently retitled, Indestructible Hulk, excuse me, and they retitled it as Hulk Number 1, because that's the new thing they're doing at Marvel, is to renumber them. And so at the end of issue 1, you see Bruce Banner get shot in the back of the head. Which you're always thinking, like, it's the Hulk. He's going to pop out, right? You know, he's going to pop out and save him. Well, apparently what you find out is this is a huge freaking conspiracy where the Hulk is actually, this assassin has been trained to hit particular spots in the brain so as to disable the Hulkness of him. And they bring in brain surgeons who want to put something into Hulk's brain. And basically they can trigger when he goes for Bruce Banner to Hulk.
Okay, so Bruce Banner takes 2 to the skull.
Yeah.
The Hulk doesn't come out to save him.
Because the pinpoint accuracy of said assassin has hit particular points in the brain that keeps the Hulk from coming to.
So then how did he survive the shots to the brain?
Well, it's comics. It's comics, okay. Sir.
It's fiction.
I see surgery.
Oh yeah, no, we're doing brain surgery, and it's supposed to be awesome. And the brain surgeon knows Bruce Banner, which is kind of interesting. But then what you find out is the anesthesiologist apparently was saved by Bruce Banner as a little girl. And so right as he's getting ready to, the surgeon has this dilemma of, do I kill him so nothing bad ever happens, or do I put this thing in so that they can Hulk him out whenever they want? And he's about ready to cut his brain and kill him. The anesthesiologist pulls the cords, and he fucking, you know, now he's no longer drugged. He Hulks out and just starts beating the crap out of everybody, you know, being awesome. In Hulk mode. Well, what's beautiful about this comic, because, I mean, Hulk is clearly supposed to be this Dr. Jekyll, right? What's great is when you take that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and spin it on its head. And you don't make it quite about that. You make it about something else. Well, so he rampages off as Hulk. He's got the whole back of his brain exposed. And then you find out that Coulson and Maria Hill show up. And they're all like, oh, hey, check him out. And then you realize that he's become a complete invalid.
So they lobotomized the Banner.
Yeah, apparently the gunshot wounds have caused brain damage. So as you can clearly see on the last page, he's like trying to spell, like, can't do it.
So, but okay, so what about when he's Hulk? Is the Hulk learning disabled as well now? Or?
We don't know. I mean,
that can be fun.
Like, so now you've taken away the intelligence of Bruce Banner characters, made him, you know, almost a complete end, which I think is really interesting. Crazy. So that's pretty cool. The other one I'm talking about, because I don't think I've ever talked about on the podcast, Uber. Uber is a World War II comic done by Kieran Gillen. And the particular one that I was reading is the special number 1, which came out like 4 weeks ago. The copy sold out real fast. I just got it this week. And it's a reimagining of World War II. So what if they were able to actually get like the Ubermensch, the superheroes, to go out? And it's really, really graphic, violent, and it's just, it's gut-wrenching at how destructive it is and how much it sticks to that horrible storyline of these people just sacrificing everything. And this particular issue goes through, they call them battleships, like 3 super hulked-out kind of characters. And it tells sort of the 3 stories that make them battle techs. And it's just, it's awesome. The guy who does it, Kieran Gillen, totally researches.
Hey, is that nudity? I see titties.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, yay, pretty graphic.
Well, it's cubes.
It's an avatar print, so you're guaranteed to see at least every 4th or 5th. But I recommend if you're a big fan of history, Kieran Gillen actually does these little essays at the back. It talks about how he, what books he's been reading and bases it on. It's really a cool comic, and they've got a trade out for 6 issues. Should be a second, so I recommend that. Thor God of Thunder. Only thing I want to mention about Thor God of Thunder, he's in fighting this evil company that's poisoning the earth, and he ends up smashing all their shit. They're called Roxxon.
He ends up being
like polluter of the world. So he's taking on Roxxon. This new girl that he's in love with from S.H.I.E.L.D. is, she's kind of eco police S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, whatever. Yeah, I don't know what they're going with here. It's all
S.H.I.E.L.D.
about
S.H.I.E.L.D. left the superpower ruling, you know, class to eco-terrorism.
Environmentalist and Thor's current crush is how she described on the first. But what's brilliant is, so Roxxon, because Asgard is over Oklahoma right now, they buy out the town, and they're trying to turn it into an industrial thing. So Thor goes nuts, starts to shit up. What's brilliant, at the end of the comic, they serve Thor paper. They subpoenaed him. They've basically been like, oh, well, screw you, bro, because you're totally in litigation now, and you can't get within 300 feet of any of our installation. We're going to sue you in every country. And I'm like, so that's the way you beat Thor. You beat him with the system, judicial system.
Well, I mean, technically, before he wasn't a citizen of the United States, but now he lives in United States airspace.
Yeah.
So technically,
I'm pretty sure Mjolnir, decides it. Is that part of the 300-foot litigation issue?
I assume so. I don't know.
I can't go there, but Mjolnir,
well, guess what? We'll fuck you anyway and just fucking throw us over there.
I just think that's brilliant. It's like, how are we going to stop Thor? We're going to press charges. So we're going to do. And then I also want to shout out to the X-Files comic. I've talked about it before, but we've got a local artist, Stuart Sager, which I don't remember if you're meeting him at the Ash comic show or not. He's the guy with all the Avengers.
Oh, yeah.
Really cool guy. He does a lot of work for IDW. Drew the first part of this comic, and he's got a very distinctive style that I just absolutely, it's dark, twisted, scary. It's pretty good. I wouldn't say that Mulder and Scully are the best, because they draw, proper characterization, but the theme in this.
Yeah,
great.
It looks creepy.
It's creepy as shit. So, if you like the X-Files, it's...
Oh, I sneeze farted. Sorry. Sorry.
Really,
you're gonna smell that a bit.
Yeah, that's gonna be awful. But so, if you like the X-Files, I highly recommend the new X-Files run. And Stuart Sager from Indianapolis. On the,
I did it again. How am I farting every time?
Sorry. So, there we go. That's the segment on...
Fuck. It's 3 farts. Okay, moving on.
Slash sneezes.
My buddy Josh says if you have 10 sneezes equivalent on your body of having an orgasm, so you're 7s away.
I always just tell people if they sneeze more than 3 times, faking it. It goes over really well. It tells me. What have I been reading?
Anything?
No, because of the whole, not working thing, I didn't go buy my comics yet. So, still waiting on those. Please smile, don't go home during the recording. I'm just thinking about it. Okay, Versus.
Versus!
I had the idea I wanted somebody to fight Predator, and told Schroeder to come up with something. He came up with a cute idea, the worms from Men in Black.
I did not know that there was a versus. I didn't understand.
He didn't know it was against the Predator or anything. I said, just name an alien, and that's what he picked.
That's true. You kind of blitzkrieged him. I knew where you were going. But
Grady had the perfect match, I think. So it is the Predator versus, do we want to go with any?
You can go with the stereotypical one, but it's up to you.
We'll just go with an average Klingon warrior. Okay, average Klingon skills.
Gotcha.
A Klingon versus a Predator.
Which is brilliant.
It's fucking great. Did you ever read Batman versus Predator?
Oh, yeah.
That series.
It's interesting, because they also do these Batman aliens as well. Mm-hmm. Dark Horse did Batman.
Because Batman killed him.
That was a Predator.
Oh, Predator. Yeah,
not alien. And they did 2 Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking classic. I got 3 issues set up.
All right, so let's set them up. Do you like to? Who wants to set up Predator?
Both Predators and Klingon both have what we call extra human strength, super strength.
Right, beyond that of Terrans. Yes,
beyond that of Terrans. Oh, excuse me.
Well, and then
pushing on my glasses right now.
Mm.
Yes, go ahead.
Pulse rifles.
The Predator has his cool Wolverine claws.
Yes.
I mean, they're part of his armor.
Super extended claws.
They're
like 2-3 foot claws.
They are now. You go watch the old Predator, it was like 6 inches.
When you mean when Lando got his ass cut up? No, Lando. Billy.
Oh, no, Apollo Creed.
Apollo Creed, there you go. Apollo Creed, when Apollo Creed got his arm cut off.
The man has a name, folks. We don't know what it is. Clearly Apollo
Creed. His name's Carl Weathers.
Yeah, Carl Weathers, there you go. Mr. Happy Gilmore.
Oh my god, yeah. Oh. That was Carl Weathers. The first one, they're 6 inches. And Predator 2 with Danny Glover, they're like foot. Then by the time you get to the Aliens versus Predator or the new Predators movie, which I had to be badass.
It was Adrian Brody. And Lawrence fantastic.
And Walton Goggins.
Just pulling it out. Pulling out the...
I mean, they were fucking huge. They were like feet.
Yeah.
At least.
It's not.
So, I mean, that's the most recent incarnation of the movie.
That's fair.
You know? 2 foot good.
1 foot six. Why not?
He's also got the targeting gun on his shoulder, so that target automatically fires. Looks like some kind of an energy pulse weapon.
We're going to go with throwing disc and the power stab as well.
Yeah, he's got a standard average predator.
Because
on his hunting trip.
Yeah, 1 and 2.
So he's got the Xena Warrior Princess disc.
Right.
Ready to throw.
It cuts through everything but cement. Yeah. But cement. So.
And then he's also got his extendable spear. Beyond that, he also has a med kit. He can't, so...
Slash nuke himself.
Yeah, he's got the nuke thing, too, on his arm. But he had, remember in Predator 2, he like mortar
in
and
the
stuff.
Bathroom. He just smashes up the porcelain to make a med kit. How that works, I don't know.
But it fucking worked.
Yeah.
So we got that. Klingon.
All right.
So this is a Klingon Empire Klingon, not a Federation Klingon.
All right. So you got to look at the major weapons. Okay, you've got a Klingon Disruptor.
Yep.
So you've got the classic sort of six shooter of the Star Trek genre.
Right. Whereas a phaser literally scrambles molecules, a disruptor blows them apart.
Yeah. There's no stun setting.
On a disruptor. That's a very good way of putting it. However, you can get shot from a disruptor and live. Like, if you get shot in the hand. But if you get shot, if you have it set to kill and you get shot in the hand with a phaser, it'll still kill you.
Yeah.
Because it would disintegrate. Disruptor would just explode your hand.
Yeah. You can hit center mass with disruptor. It's really, really. So then you've also got the, I wish I could remember what the actual Klingon names are.
Whatever.
You've got the Batleth, which the Batleth is the coolest weapon. So we'll get to the Batleth. But you also have their knives. Have you ever seen their knives where they've got, it's the long center knife and it's got kind of like winged points. So once you stab it in, if someone tries to twist and pull it out, it's really gross. But then you've also got the Batleth, two-handed weapon, the big curved classic on weapon.
Now, fun story for you real quick. Buddy of mine, 3 or 4 years ago, went to a performance at Christmas time, Christmas Carol, done completely Klingon with everybody in Klingon makeup.
Nice.
And Tiny Tim used the Batleth as his crush. So, pretty cool. Shout out to Aaron Bond up there in Minnesota.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
So my question, how does the active camouflage come in the fight here? Obviously, you've never seen a Predator movie without that active camera.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's a bending of the light, so there's still a visible element.
Right.
What you do have to remember, though, is that Klingons are heightened to auditory, olfactory, and visual sense. So they're not like your typical human. I mean, you'll see every once in a while in Next Generation episodes, you'll see Worf kind of like sniff the air a la Wolverine, and then he suddenly knows that they're moments away from attack. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would be like a one-shot thing. I don't think that the active camouflage would get the kill shot. I think that the Klingon
definitely maybe.
Oh yeah, he'd get the drop on him on the first shot. There's no
the
doubt.
The Predator has to get the shot. There's no possible way.
Well, yeah, there is a possible way. Who's quick on the draw? Because if Worf is not, or example, the Klingon is not physically holding a weapon, the Predator doesn't go for it. The Predator only gets you your arm.
Remember that. And he doesn't go for pregnant women.
That's what's great about the Predator movies. Like, you're watching it, and you're like, it's fucking scary. But it's not. It's only scary if you're holding a fucking gun. You and me could walk around, no problem.
I suppose that's true.
Okay, Predator's got the ability to bend light around him. Klingons, they're...
hypersensitive.
Their cloaking technology only works on a ship.
I've never, that I recall it, I've never seen it work on.
There's no way that they have, like, a set of fucking armor that makes you invisible.
No, not that I know of.
The Dominion view, but that's something.
Nerd. Push up your glasses. We're only talking about very specific sets here.
All right. Where are they fighting at? We're just in the woods.
Do we have dice to roll for? No. Excited about this. Oh, goddamn.
No, that list of places that
random number generator. We're gonna fight in Stanley's backyard. No, no.
It's a predator. It's got to be the jungle, right?
No, Predator 2 was in the city.
The concrete jungle. I mean, they made a whole fucking video game about that shit. I played it, and it was fucking horrible.
Matt's
sorry.
Dead, folks.
Sorry. Okay.
At least I'm here for a reason.
We'll carry on. Call 911.
What's the Klingon homeworld called?
Kronos.
Kronos. Okay, there's a predator on Kronos. He's heard tell of these Klingon, and he wants to make sure that he is the dominant hunter in the world.
That's
so
fair.
He finds a, as I recall from a Star Trek novel, called Avenger, actually. Klingons, as they come of age, they do a predator-ish thing. There's a game preserve full of genetically engineered predator beasts, you know, super predators, carnivores, and they have to go in there and hunt only with their knife.
Gotcha.
So, what happens is...
So, are we cutting down to a knife?
No. I'm just saying, okay. That's the way it worked in the story. Mr. Klingon's walking through the game preserve. We'll say it's a game ward. Okay, so he is armed.
Okay.
Give him a name.
Gah! Okay, so Gah is walking around fully armed in this predatory preserve, and that just so happens that that's where our predator is, lying in wait.
Gotcha.
For a hunt. Who watches the watch? Mm-hmm. Who hunts the hunt?
Yeah. So I think we've already decided the predator is going to get first drop. That's going to happen.
It's going to happen, but this guy works.
Is the Klingon ready? Is the question.
The Klingon works in a facility with animals designed solely to kill you.
He's going
to
be prepared.
He's going to be like on edge. Like, if he farted, it'd be like, you know, because he's all clenched.
Sounds like an elephant?
No, it's just tight.
Oh, okay.
He's clenching. Ready. He's scared.
Klingons are scared.
Well, okay. He's not scared.
He squeezed out tiny farts. All
right.
All right.
So what happens?
Well, so what does the predator strike with first? Does he go?
He uses the laser cannon it's going to be. I mean, it's just like sitting in a deer blind. You're sitting out there with a rifle. You know, you're waiting for the deer to cross your path so you shoot.
Does he start with it, or does he go for the hunter's edge? Because the question is, like, when he's up against a lot of people, is that automated cannon? But does he use it to begin with? Because he's trying to be a hunter. I mean, that's a real question.
I mean, are we looking?
I go deer hunting. I don't fucking try to use a knife.
Well,
but
right.
You're also not a predator.
Well, I kill and eat animals. I don't know how we want to define the term predator here.
Okay. Well, because in all of the original predator movies, he starts with claw or staff and skins prey to scare.
No, that's what he does after he's killed. He because he takes trophies.
Mm.
So if he's going to start with the cannon to try and get the immediate kill shot, maybe he grazes the Klingon, but he definitely doesn't take it. The Klingon, like we've already talked about, has heightened senses.
And he works in this, already stressful environment. Yeah. He's already looking for danger.
So maybe he wings him, hits him in the shoulder, but doesn't take him out.
So Klingon falls to the ground, probably does a little roll.
Yeah.
I'm picturing Mel Gibson in a Lethal Weapon movie. Probably takes it to the shoulder, hits the ground, rolls back up with his rifle.
Up with the disruptor.
Or his disruptor.
Yeah.
His cockpit rock or whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Batlift.
Thank you. His batlift.
That's a two-handed weapon he used to hold
the disruptor. We'll refer to the super nerd. What?
No.
Two-handed. It is.
So he comes up with two disruptors.
We're going to roll 2d10s to determine how much damage he does here.
He's got two disruptors. One in each hand.
Right. Klingons aren't really known for their subtlety, so he probably just unloads them in every direction.
Just starts.
So Jesse Ventura.
Just
lights up with a change gun. Fuck you! And then it hits nothing. Or we're going to save the high perception. Maybe he wings the predator.
Can your voice get any higher?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe we can try this thing.
Okay, so now they both have lost their positions. Because they both have started firing.
Right, right.
It's clear where they're at. They back up, you know, maybe get some cover behind a tree or something. Who is going to make the offensive strike?
Well, see, I think that, now correct me if I'm wrong, because I've not seen the entire Predator cannon, but that cannon seems to me like more rifle-esque. It's like shot, shot. It's not like semi-automatic or automatic.
It can go fast from like the Aliens versus Predator movies, but it's not like...
I would almost go to say that it's a one-shot only in this fight. You think it's more than that in the fight?
It's like it's shot.
So what I'm saying is if you've got a slow...
It's like a pump-action shotgun, probably.
Right. So if he's got a... If the shoulder cannon's got kind of that slow but repetitive shot, the guy pulling the triggers of the disruptor, the Klingon's going to get more shots, you know, per minute. Mm-hmm. So clearly the Predator's at a disadvantage. So I think if anybody's going to advance into hand-to-hand combat first, it's going to be the Predator leaping across that bound because he's at that disadvantage with those shots per minute.
If you'll sit with me for a second on this thought. my thought is that the Predator's in a tree, takes the shot, falls out of the tree when he gets shot.
Plus, let's not discount the fact that the disruptor would then
destroy whatever
destroy
it is
the light. The light. technology.
Yeah, the shield's gone.
But can you imagine the Predator with his helmet on look kind of like a Klingon wearing a mask?
A little bit, yeah.
So the Gach, or whatever his name is like, who is this fucking asshole?
Yeah, throws his hands up.
Yeah, like, what up, dick?
Well, see, but, if you're going with that, see, the Klingon code of honor. See, at that point, he would drop his disruptors automatically and go to the dagger or the batlet. Because then
Think of that. Yeah. Cody's been trying to say something. Say it.
Well, and my thoughts were, at this point, they're both on the ground looking at each other. Right? Would the Predator throw the disc? I mean, the disc is what's going to come into play here. Because whether or not he throws the disc is going to determine whether or not there's a ranged attack once they're both on the ground.
Okay. Here's what I'm picturing. Hear me out.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hopefully they do this on Super Powered Beatdown. Really great show on you.
Which is good. I've actually...
Yeah. Okay, the Predator falls out of the tree.
Right.
Stands up. His technology is going off, so now it's got a helmet.
Yeah, you have to wait for it. I mean, it's a Predator film. Yeah. Slash, you know.
So whatever. Now they're standing there looking at each other. Gach sees him, and he's like, just throws his disruptors down, pulls out his bat, right?
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's a Klingon. Now, the Predator, seeing this, got a bladed weapon, so he's not going to use his arm cannon, because that's what he does, right? Because
he's an honorable hunter.
He is an honorable hunter, but now he does the slow, like, take the mask off thing that he does in every movie, you know?
And shows
the... pulls it off and...
daggered vagina.
Yeah, his fucking weird, toothy vagina face. Klingon's like, what the fuck? Then he just does the snicked, like his little Wolverine two-foot claws come out on his arms, and they charge at each other.
Nice.
Now it's hand-to-hand combat. Two blades on the Predator. We got one big motherfucking blade on the Klingon. What happens?
See, well, I don't know how you could ever exert...
I mean, orchestrating these fucking things.
I don't know how you could ever exert more with two... I mean, because if you think about the blades, right? You're only exerting force from your elbow down. You know what I mean? You're not getting full swings. Whereas with the batlet, you've got shoulders in that. You've got upper torso. Like, you're going to have a lot more force with that. It's going to be slower, but you're going to be able to exert more force.
The problem with it is that you're going to come across with someone who can block and then attack.
Because, yeah, you come with an overhand strike with the batlet. All I got to do is go boom, block. Or even block with one. And stab. Stab.
This is true. It's true. Which is why, though, if you notice, the batlet actually has three handholds. Now I'm getting super nerdy. So you have three handholds, so the attack would be on the rearmost, so that you get kind of the axe chop. But then as the block comes in, that's where you switch to the dual hand grip twist to try and, you know, push that block away as you go.
So you've got the center pivot point,
you've got the two outside points.
You're really, really fighting hard for this Klingon win.
That's because I love the Klingon. The batlet, I don't care what you say, hands down the coolest, you know, like, melee weapon of the science fiction universe is the batlet. I would hang on one on my wall. Viewers, if someone wants, listeners, if someone out there wants to get a batlet,
but like,
that'd be awesome.
He blocks, drops, and worst case scenario, he gets blocked and blocks another attack, and then extend the beard around, stabs out of it.
I think you have to remember, the Klingons are people who play arm wrestling with daggers. Okay. Like, he's going to take that shot. He's going to take that snicked, and then he's going to go, fuck you in Klingon, and then totally just keep hammering down. Like,
fuck you.
Exactly. He's just going to keep hammering down on him. Like, I don't know. Like,
have you seen how built fucking Predator is?
I see, that's the thing. Klingons don't care.
It's like Jean-Claude Van Damme was supposed to be the original Predator, and he didn't do it because he was short. Like, think about that. How huge a person was
the guy
in
the original Predator suit was the guy that was Chewbacca.
Yeah, like,
and Harry.
Think about it. 7 foot tall, son of a bitch, who just blocks your shit and then, like, puts a blade in your hand. Like, really?
I don't know, man. They just don't care, though. Anytime you see Worf playing on, they're just going to take shots. They're like barbarians.
Are we
going
to have to vote on this? Is this going to happen? I mean, that's the question.
Like, I mean, I'm...
Because this is the, by far, and I've listened to tons of different past versus, this is very standoffish. I don't know where the line is drawn. Is there a line that can be drawn? Or do we just have to make subjective views?
I've never seen a Klingon retreat, ever.
When have you seen a Predator retreat?
Wasn't it AVP where they went back to ship after fighting the aliens?
No, he killed the Quindai, and they carried him off.
And then the little one came out of it.
Yeah, because he was subjected to bullshit back. He had a face hugger hit him a long time.
Just really pulling his bat left.
The fact that you keep bringing it up is fucking amazing.
We're just going to say one more time. Batleth. We're going to say it.
Batleth. Okay.
There you go.
Takes the batleth in for the overhead swing. Predator goes to block. Doesn't realize there's a third handle. Okay.
Oh.
So now Gach takes the third handle, flips it under, catches the gut on old Mr. Predator. Mm. Predator's taking it back, realizes he's mortally wounded. He activates his arm nuke.
Mm.
What happens then? Does the Klingon recognize that that's a countdown?
Hell no, because he never backs away. We're going to take that from Cody
Gray.
Because
Klingons don't back away.
That's true.
So you know how this one ends? Murder fucking suicide. Blood out. Stay tuned next week when we have Werewolf by Night versus Chewbacca.
Good call. That was a fantastic finish.
That won't happen. That probably won't happen.
I mean, yeah, in every incarnation of Predator, they always activate the arm.
That's true.
And the Klingons don't fucking back down. No. You're fucking right. They would both go out in a warrior's death.
See, this is where, when we argued earlier, whether it was a regular Klingon or Worf. Because, see, Worf would be like, screw this.
Yeah.
And he'd run away. Worf's
got responsibility, like, man. I got Alexander.
I'm half educated. I know what's going on. I'm going to run the fuck away.
You know, you get the picture of Gok here. Like, he recognizes the countdown on the arm. And so when he gets down to, like, the last two characters, he just, you know, puts his blade up and salute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's true. There you go.
Good call, Matt.
Nobody wins,
but they both. I mean, the Predator got to prove that he was a cannier fighter, was able to get the last say, I will destroy you, I might die in the process. Committing seppuku.
Right, but they get their glorious death.
And then the Klingon gets an honorable warrior's death, too. So, fun. Yeah. They're both happy.
There you go.
All right, good talk, gentlemen. Yeah. Our meat and potatoes this week, our big topic. Cody, explain it to me again.
All right, so this came up from a conversation I was having at work. A coworker who was arguing with me about the sort of the principles of Captain America and what he would or would not do. So being with Schroeder here, who graduated with a degree in psychology, and of course Matt, who works in the psychological field, I thought it'd be great to get these guys together and let's analyze comic book heroes and comic villains in relation to the DSM-4, the DSM-5, if you're a big psychology nerd, which is all about how we analyze people with mental disorders, how we diagnose people who have psychological problems.
And we're not going to do with pre-existing things like Black Manta, for instance. The arch nemesis of Aquaman has autism.
Right.
That's, you know, a part of his character. We're not going with things that are established in the canon. We're going to diagnose on our own for fun. So, I presume you have certain characters you wanted to discuss today?
Well, you know, sort of, a little bit. Okay. I kind of had a plan. Not really. But, I mean, just sort of talking about these characters in an interesting way. Schroeder and I were talking about this ahead of time. Batman, for example. Like, if you were to case study Bruce Wayne as a character, knowing full well his alter ego is Batman, what, if you put him on your, you know, your psychology couch, what are you going to say about
it? I mean, oh, God.
Well, you can't not add
narcolepsy. He always has to be the supreme authority when it comes to morality. Fix narcolepsy. Narcissism?
Narcissism.
Okay.
Said narcolepsy.
I like narcolepsy way better.
I've been too long thinking about that.
Batman's like ready to face off with the Joker. He's like,
yeah. Thank you, by the way.
You're welcome.
It's fantastic.
But Schroeder made a point for PTSD for Batman.
Yeah,
I did.
Which to me, I would argue, again, I am the least psychological person in this room, but I would argue, so PTSD usually is something that occurs like pretty relative, you know, like, I don't want to say short time frame, but relatively soon after the fact.
Okay.
You know?
I think I had PTSD once for a period of time. I worked at this gas station in Terre Haute and Rock. And I held a gunpoint, you know, really scary. And it was two African-American gentlemen in hoodie.
Right.
Okay. So I lived by this bar, three doors down from the bar. So when I walked the bar, I saw anybody, and it didn't matter if they were African-American, which I thought was very interesting. If I saw anybody in a hoodie walking towards me, I wouldn't even go three doors down to the
bar. Right.
I just had this, like, insane fear. And nights that I would work after that, like, if there was no customers, what I would do is I would, instead of being out on the floor, because when the guys came in to rob me, I was, like, stalking.
Yeah.
I would go to the office. I would get the little handheld, like, alarm button thing, because we had a portable one. I would hold it in my hand, and I would have the office door just cracked open, and I would just stare at the doors.
Yeah.
Because I was so fucking pissed scared.
Right, but see, like, PTSD, it's got that freeze quality, you know what I mean? Batman has almost turned it into a psychosis.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
The thing. What has Batman done out of fear?
Well,
like, for that night, he had no fear.
Well, and the way I thought about it is that PTSD led to the transformation into Batman. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily what he is as a hero, but what he was before that led to him becoming that hero. His fear and his understanding of his parents' death and the way he took that in, and I guess the addition of fear led into him becoming the Batman.
Okay.
I mean, and that's kind of how I vision it, is that these things that traumatically, you know, messed with his brain made him become these things, who this thing that has to continue on to make everyone else not fear or not feel what he had to go through.
But to me, it's almost like a psychosis. It's a hero complex. I mean, not to be trite, but it's the fact that he's gone through something, and he, you know, that hero complex of, I'm going to save everybody, I'm going to keep this from happening to anybody else, is what motivates, not the PTSD, in my opinion. I think we could argue PTSD for other characters, but not Batman.
Maybe PTSD led to what he became, but not what he is.
But I think he's never been inactive. Anything, he's constant thinking, which I think is sort of a different angle.
I want to go down another route here and say that the moment that the parents were shot,
oh, yeah,
and Bruce Wayne stopped being Bruce,
yeah,
right, at that point, I mean, it's complete dysphoria. The character just died inside, reinvented himself as somebody else. You know, he spent the next, say, 10 doing that, going through the process.
Right.
But from that point on, he became Batman. Bruce Wayne became Batman.
Well, you always see the interesting shot of where the bat crashes through the window. And
yeah.
He says, I will become a bat. Like, that's a whole sort of ritualistic thing that if you think about actually occurring for an individual.
Bats frighten me.
Yeah.
I use them to strike fear in my...
Like, that is totally way more in the psychosis range than it is the, you know, post-traumatic stress.
And let's not forget, too, in Dark Knight Rises, Catwoman leaves him on the roof and says,
so that's what that feels like.
He uses that voice when there's nobody else around. He talks to himself in that fucking voice. Okay?
It's true. Maybe.
That's almost a split personality type.
Yeah, he has trouble distinguishing one's which.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Is Batman good?
But, I mean, is it?
I don't know.
But do personalities speak to each other?
Yeah,
that's the question. That's the real question when it comes to that. Like, do they speak to each other?
Well, do they actually? I mean, it's a rhetorical question, but it's Batman rhetorical question itself, because Bruce Wayne doesn't know anybody like that. But it's so in character, he's being in character when he's around.
Or is that,
dude? I don't know.
Because I feel as though that's only a film thing. Because you think Batman? I mean, when Batman talks to Alfred, does he use that voice, or does Batman only speak in film in that voice? I mean, because I don't want to throw it away here. I mean, I agree with your thought process, but my problem is that he doesn't speak to Alfred that. Why would he speak to himself?
But he does if he's in the outfit.
He speaks to Alfred.
When he's got the cowl on, he speaks to Alfred like that.
I think that when they're arguing back and forth, at first there's this very, you know,
friendly relationship.
Yeah, then you get to that moment where he's like, screw you, Alfred. I'm doing what I want to do.
When he goes back into rich kid mode, like,
yeah.
I'll tell you why, because I said so.
Because
work for me,
because
old man.
I'm fucking Batman, that's why.
And that's usually illustrated with the pulling up of the cowl, and I imagine the changing of...
Ooh.
Interesting.
It's interesting.
All right, who else we got?
Next hero.
Want to go hero or would jump a villain for Batman?
I mean, you go wherever you want to go. What do you think? What do you want to talk about?
Well, I mean, Batman villains are getting the goddamn caseline here. So, I mean, do we want to jump away from Batman?
Let's not go with like a big one like the Joker or something. Let's go with like a C-list Batman.
I spoke earlier to you gentlemen about the Riddler and about the way that he acts and the idea that
he has
that
extreme OCD.
OCD. Oh, yeah. OCD runs that villain.
I mean, he's the only fucking villain that purposely leaves a clue that will allow you to foil his entire plan. Not just whatever caper he's on, but that caper is, you know, actually like he's robbing this jewelry store and so he can fund this one big project here that's going to actually help him find out, who's Batman.
And the thing about the Riddler isn't that he leaves these clues. It's that if you don't follow the clues or do things exactly how he expects them to go, that's when he gets upset. That's when things change. Because the Riddler leaves you these clues, but he expects you to do things exactly the way you want, because he almost wants to be.
Well, yeah, okay, that's a great point. So, he gives you the clue, and Cody Batman here takes this clue, reads it, and he's like, okay, this means he's going to rob this place at this time.
Right.
So you go to this place at this time, and not only is he definitely robbing that joint, he's also set up a trap for you. So he expects you to come and find him. He just thinks that his traps are going to fucking work, you know?
Because he's goddamn Enigma. Because
he's completely, I mean, he's
His name is Enigma for a reason.
No, his name's not in from the movies.
It's Enigma.
Right? Edward E. Enigma.
That's from the movies.
Comic guys, but I think they call him Enigma.
Yeah, you call him Enigma in your new 52 shit. Who the fuck? Oh, what was the Riddler's real name? Fuck. Fuck.
Enigma.
Edward Enigma.
It's a pun.
I know.
Laugh and enjoy it. No, I was actually going to say in Zero Year right now, they've got, I don't know if you read the latest of Zero Year or not, but he's taken over all of Gotham, and Batman's apparently been unconscious for like 6 months. He's been unconscious for like 6 months-ish, basically, I guess.
Oh my god,
coma.
I love that.
So he wakes up, and apparently, so the Riddler's in control, and basically what he asks is each day, a citizen of Gotham can come to basically their Times Square, and they ask the Riddler some sort of riddle. And if he can't answer it, he's going to just let everybody go. He's just going to just...
Fuck!
Edward, bum, bum, bum. But so I just think that it's interesting because you are right.
Disregard the core on my phone.
But yeah, no, I think you're right. You're talking about obsessive compulsion. You're talking about, megalomaniac. Define him as a megalomaniac.
Megalomaniac, somebody that's trying to take over the world.
I would go more sociopath with degrees of society, not necessarily.
It's not a sociopathy. A sociopathy would be that he has no morality.
Right. He has a morality.
He knows that he's breaking the law. That's why he's giving you clues to find him.
Right. It's more of a sociopathic desire to be caught.
God damn it. Was I thinking Frank Gorshin, the guy that played him in the old show?
So Frank Gorshin's definitely the guy who played him in the...
he's no Jim Carrey.
Yes, no Jim. My hand is back. Fuck. Still read. Edward Nashton. Original. This is like 40s.
Yeah. All right, so...
Okay, who else?
Well, I think we could also... I think Peter Parker's always a interesting character.
But it's hard to analyze Peter Parker because he's a normal average.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with him.
Yeah, that's true.
Have to have a mental illness because they want to fight crime.
I mean, at some point, I'm sure he develops a hero's complex where he feels he's the one who saves society. But when you really break it down, like, he's a normal average everyday person.
Yeah.
Like, he has issues with loved ones, with I guess girlfriends follow under the love issue, but like, everything falls around him being a little person or him saving heroin or him saving the person to love. Yeah. So, I mean, is that really I wouldn't
I mean, he's an issue. I would say, if anything, he might be prone to depression.
Yeah.
The death of Gwen Stacy. Yeah. Then that black suit. You know, Parker Spider-Man.
Right.
But I don't think it falls under a psychoanalysis that says he has an issue.
Gotcha. I think you just give him some Ativan.
Yeah, right. There you go. He's going to prescribe prescription drugs to save
Peter
our ears
Parker.
Here. There you go. Peter Parker, you'd be a better Spider-Man if you took this. Just saying.
Side effects you wouldn't will no longer stick to walls. I'm sorry.
Also, you wouldn't be such a whiny, crying bitch. But, this is how it goes.
All right, well, who else do you throw out there? You throw out, like, Lex Luthor?
Oh, no. I mean, that's fucking beyond narcissist.
I mean,
he's complete sociopath in the terms of the only value that is his. He does not value human life.
Nope, not at all.
But see, so you say that, but then you get those weird Superman stories where Luthor ends up helping in a slight way
humanity.
To turn the...
Because he doesn't want to, he wants to rule. He can't rule a dead planet,
So it's a self-preservation
thing. Yeah.
So I guess the real question here is who falls under, what we think are serious issues. Like, really, like, besides Batman villain, who else is seriously has issues that you can...
Mental health problems?
That you can...
Fucking every villain!
We'll pick
something. Like, here's the thing, even nowadays, in the real world, career criminals, they don't... Okay, the idea that a motherfucker puts on a costume, especially in Batman's world, where a lot of the villains don't have superpowers, you get the occasional, Killer Croc is really mutating into a croc. It's not just a guy with German muscles.
It's also Batman. I said it's also Batman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Asshole.
No,
Batman is real.
I'm not saying he's not. We're just trying to get away from the Batman here.
Well, I think that it's the easy argument to go to, because since I've always found Batman is depowered compared to the others, that it's really easy. His villains are less superpowered and more aspects of his rogues gallery is, you've got egomaniacal, you've got, sociopaths, you've got psychopaths. I mean, you talk about Zsasz, the character.
Oh, God.
Yeah, Victor Zsasz is a great example of, he is a sociopath. There is no value to human life. I mean, there are people in the world that are like Victor Zsasz.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't use the detailed isometrics that he's, strong, but that shit exists in the real world. Is there a Victor Zsasz out there in this real world that has, is just trying to get a body count, but then fucking makes a hash mark with a knife on his arm? No. Because Victor Zsasz is fucking crazy. I mean...
I guess
almost like supervillains need their own fucking diagnosis.
That's a good call.
You need a super DSM.
Super psychopath, we'll call it. Super psychopath.
I guess my best thought is let's go to another superhero and then try and pick somebody else. Because, Batman's obviously an easy one. We've got a lot to go from. But who else?
I mean,
I guess we'll start with another superhero who has, besides Iron Man, X-Men. Like, what else can we go through that has
all right, let's talk about Logan.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Wolverine.
It's a classic.
I mean,
severe depression.
Severely depressed most of the time.
And why would you not be?
Amazing anger issue.
Yeah.
Berserk rage of his is, but is there something fundamentally wrong with him? Because wouldn't his healing factor stop it?
Physically, yes. Mentally, how does that work?
I don't know. I mean, like, I can't remember if it's dopamine or serotonin.
It's dope.
You're depressed, it's too dopamine.
I believe it.
So, wouldn't his body regulate it and drop the dopamine?
Well, but if you think about his body reacting to stress-like scenarios, pumps up adrenaline, right? Yeah. So what if, ultimately, Wolverine is junkie? He gets super massive amounts of adrenaline and testosterone flowing through his body because his body kicks into the, I have to save myself, you know? So pops the claws, you know, you got everything raging, everything's awesome. And then he, you know, retracts the claws, goes, sits down to have a beer. Now he's not on his fix anymore because
he's on withdrawal.
Yeah, say he's going through withdrawal of not having enough adrenaline and testosterone.
That's depression.
Yeah. So depression is coming not from an imbalance, but because fighting, it's an overabundance. But it's a necessary part of the overabundance. We need it to rock. That's
just
why
like
it's
any
not
junkie
ready.
When he that makes so much sense. He's an addiction.
He's an adrenaline junkie.
I copyright that Marvel, so if you choose to write that, it's on
they're
record.
They're fucking killing him next month.
I don't know.
Yeah, they're killing him.
Damn it. Take that story instead. I only want 5%.
Just fucking 3%. Just don't kill Wolverine. All right, well, that's it. So then, on the flip side...
You want to stay with Sten?
No, how about we try to diagnose something that's not diagnosable?
All right.
Ultra.
Interesting.
So, to a virtual mind, all reality is virtual.
Right.
Which means, like, you know, you've heard of the I think, therefore I am.
Yeah.
So, intruding, in actuality, the only thing that you know 100% is that you exist. Ultron will program. So... he doesn't even have that. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't even have knowledge, 100% knowledge that he exists. He has somebody else told the thing. Original.
Right.
Progress from that. What does that do to a superintelligence?
Well,
if all reality is virtual, he could...
It removes
reality. Like, you know when you're late, you're laying in bed late at night, and you can't sleep, and you're just having those weird thoughts, like, man, there's no God. Right? You're just having these weird thoughts in your head. For him, is it like, man, what if I'm a blip? What if I have this awesome adamantium body that I built?
Well, I think that the thing about Ultron is he has the ability to adapt, but do you really think he has the ability to quote-unquote create a thought, think outside the box? Or is he totally reactionary based on virus?
Well, isn't his thing, and I didn't follow the age of it, I mean, isn't his thing he wants to replace humanity with?
Well, he wants to create that sort of perfect society. You know, originally Hank Pym, at least the storylines I've read, created him to establish order. So that's ultimately his goal, is to establish order.
He was a prison guard, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he realizes that even the people who are putting people in jail aren't establishing order. So they have to be, you know, sort of Cyberman-esque. You know, you gotta eliminate them or control them in order to create order.
Yeah.
But how do you, I don't know, like,
do you have to establish morality to establish, I mean.
See, I think morality is thinking outside the box because you're concerned with how other people perceive your action. I mean, ultimately, I mean, if you ignore the self part of morality, morality is how other people the action take. If he can't creatively think outside the box, if he's such a sociopath that he has no...
And he's limited by his program.
He literally can't conceive the thoughts of others. It is order or things that need to be made into order. So I don't even know if you have those thoughts to begin with.
Yeah, it'd be like Ultron and Brainiac for that same.
Yeah. Sort of that ultimate AI thing. You get all the sci-fi stuff.
Transcendence. Everybody see it?
I have not been good.
DiCaprio,
I'm sure you won't for
it. No, he's not it. Johnny Depp.
Don't look at me.
I don't know. Whatever. Johnny Depp.
Google!
Watch it. It might be good.
Okay, anything else you want to talk about with this? This has been a very interesting and very not what I expect to talk. This is very interesting.
Yeah.
This is a good idea.
I mean, I see our running time there. We're definitely... pushing it a little bit, but I think it's something that if I look forward to any sort of listener comments, you know, reach us on our Facebook page, let us know. Who did we miss? Who did we get wrong? What do you think? Should talk about the future. Maybe we'll have Cody back on and do this again in, you know, six weeks, a month, two
most
months.
Definitely.
You can email any questions to Matt at followthe.tv or Cody at cowboysbuttsdrivemenuts.com.
Is that really your email?
Oh, yeah.
I really hope it did. It's fantastic.
Other than that, anything else, gentlemen, that we'd to discuss?
I don't know. My mind's still blown with my Wolverine comment. Like, I'm sitting here going, I had one good thought today on the brothel.
That was pretty
good. Holy shit!
Upcoming weekend is Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah.
So go do that and then come home and pay $2 for a digital copy of Bovine. Also, get that at www.followthat.tv/bovine.
Also, May the 4th, Star Wars Day.
May the 4th be with you. And then Cinco de Mayo, and then, fuck it, let's keep drinking on the 6th.
We already started.
Yeah, sounds good.
The hangover will kill you, so just keep on drinking.
My wife and I had some Groupons already set up for Spider-Man 2 this Friday. So
nice.
Expect to talk about that next week here at the brothel.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. We're going to the Studio Movie Grill. You have a beer while you watch a movie.
It is pretty. Push a button. And shit.
Fuck them. I love that.
It sounds fantastic. I wish I could. At any point ever. Never
go.
Been.
It's right up the road.
It's really close to right here.
It's like a mile away.
Yeah. It's a mile away.
You're a horrible host. You've never taken me. It's unbelievable.
So then, I don't know. Anything you want to plug, Cody? Somebody you love you want to shout out to?
Nothing really. I mean, there's an MS walk this week. This is awesome. I have a great friend who helped him a little bit this week. And hopefully you guys, you know, continue to contribute research and make it good. Besides that, you know, Rancor's Brothel is fucking awesome. And I enjoyed it.
And we enjoyed having you here, Shorter. We did. Mm. Good. Anything from you?
Nope.
And Excelsior.
Bye.
Cowboys butts drive me nuts.
No, that's fantastic.
Bye.